Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Lisa Cherry. Lisa is an author, researcher and leading international trainer and consultant, specialising in assisting school services and systems to create change that supports working with the legacy of trauma. Lisa has been working in education and children's services for over 30 years and combines academic knowledge and research with professional skills and personal experiences. And today, Lisa and I are talking about how to improve connections at home. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you on this Monday morning. Oh, I was feeling quite good about today. I've been in lots of meetings this morning, so I'm feeling very excited about talking to you, Claire, and a little bit of anticipation about what you might ask me.
Well, I've got, there's a couple of questions that I've jotted down. I was like, I wouldn't like to get asked that question. So we'll see how we get on, Lisa. We always start off the podcast with just a book recommendation on the topic we're talking about, which is adversity in childhood and how to improve connections at home is the kind of theme.
Yeah. So look, I feel a little bit naughty doing this, but Conversations That Make a Difference for Children and Young People that came out 2 years ago is a fantastic book. And I think you've read it, have you?
I have read it, and I believe it might have been written by your good self.
Yes. And it does feel a little bit rude suggesting my book, but it is such a good book, and it's award-winning, and it's kind of seen as a really accessible book. And I think that's important when we're thinking about quite difficult things. How do we access some of the more difficult things that can happen to us, around us, and with us?
Yeah, and I think having read it myself, it's quite helpful to talk about it. But the conversational nature of the book, as well as being about important conversations, makes it really accessible. And I think for parents, carers and practitioners listening, sometimes the books that we recommend on the podcast can be sort of quite heavy. And I'm not saying that academic literature shouldn't be accessed by everyone, but sometimes it can be a bit much. And yeah, having such an accessible book on a difficult topic, I think, yeah, it was great for me to read, especially during the pandemic. I think was good timing with it.
Yeah. So I definitely would say to people to have a little look at that. And it's got some nice bits. It's in three parts. The first bit looks at attachment. The second bit looks at adversity. The third bit looks at trauma. So it sort of really helps simplify some of those words that, you know, already you've used. You know, what do they mean even? So that was kind of the first thing for me, was to make that clear for people to help them.
Yeah, because I was thinking that when I was jotting down a few questions, sort of delving into the topic, when we talk about adversity and when we talk about trauma, what might be the main differences when we're talking about those two topics?
Well, sometimes there isn't a difference. You know, but I think just to kind of flesh out some of that, adversity is something that many of us will experience in our childhoods. And many of us will recover from those because we have strong, high quality relationships around us. We're embedded in strong communities. We go into school environments that are inclusive, welcoming and centralized relationships and belonging. And that really supports being able to buffer the adverse experiences that we can have, that can happen not through anyone's fault. You know, things happen in life, and they happen in families, and they happen to humans. When we're thinking about trauma, we're thinking about the experience, and I think my favorite way of thinking about this is really kind of comes from the work of Gabor Maté, and actually even Peter Fonagy talks about this. It's, you know, it's that sense of aloneness. It's not what happens to us, but it's what happens inside of us as a result of what happens to us. So when we're thinking about trauma, it's that overwhelming flooding of our systems, and nobody is coming. So that's where we can think about trauma in another way than adversity. Having said that, we can have adverse experiences that are very traumatic. It's a great question, because it is quite confusing, but I hope that kind of helps us start to think about what is it that helps and supports us from recovering from very difficult things that happen to us.
Like how it's important that as practitioners or family members, carers, that we don't end up just focusing on the adversity or the trauma. And obviously we might at times delve into that, but thinking about the things that we can do to help support someone rather than, you know, continuously being in that deficit model. Oh no, that's happened, as opposed to focusing on the things that we do to support.
Absolutely. And there are lots of things that are really helpful, but one of the key things that's really helpful is around relationships and thinking about relational wealth. You know, what relationships do we have around the child, you know, around the family? What are they engaged in outside of school? Where do they find things that they enjoy doing with other people so they can build some relationships while also engaging in an activity that hopefully is reducing the buildup of toxic stress? How do we cultivate inclusive environments that are fueled by belonging in the schools that children are going into? How do we create spaces for parents and carers to feel very connected to their school, rather than perhaps sometimes you can feel quite intimidated by the school environment as a parent? So all of those kind of things are really helpful ways of building capacity around children and families.
Talk a bit more about toxic stress. I was really interested in that phrase that you used. What is toxic stress, I suppose, just to start off with?
Well, Jack Shonkoff talks about positive stress, you know, the stuff that we need to have that kind of positive stress that gets us somewhere on time, that helps us sit an exam, that, you know, all of those kind of things, and is buffered by relationships when we're growing up that support all of that. Tolerable stress is where really difficult things happen, but we have buffers around us. We'll remember that those things happen, but we have that buffer. We have those buffers. And then in relationships and experiences. And then toxic stress he refers to as when the body releases all of that cortisol, and there isn't the opportunity to co-regulate with someone else to help come back to homeostasis, to help come back to balance. So in other words, nobody is coming. That kind of build-up is what I'm talking about, what I'm thinking about. How do we release that? We often hear people talking a lot about counselling and CAMS and therapy and all of those kind of ways of dealing with the buildup of toxic stress, but that's not what they're attempting to deal with. But actually, what would be really helpful is for children to have places and spaces where they can release some of that through sport, through music, through drama, through play, you know, all of those things that help us make sense of the world we're living in. But also, trauma happens to the body. So embodied things are really helpful for discharging some of that. And, you know, exercise. Or I had a great experience with a head teacher who you went to her school in the morning, and the first thing you did was everyone went in the hall and did Zumba, you know, which isn't going to be everyone's cup of tea. But actually, it was a really good way of leaving whatever had gone on at home behind and entering into a new space in a way that was like shaking it out of the body and having a transition, an embodied transition into a new space. And I just thought that was genius. They didn't know how genius it was because they did that because they had a teacher who was a Zumba teacher, you know, so they were utilizing what was in the room. But actually, really, really good stuff around transitions, leaving one space, coming into another, and using the body to release whatever had built up already that day.
That's so lovely. I am probably on record, maybe even on this podcast, of sharing that would be Zumba would be like the lowest kind of activity that I would choose to do. However, when you pass it and you see people doing it at the gym or a leisure centre, it looks like so much fun. And being like quite free with it is kind of how I see that kind of thing. And I think exercise, movement is so important. I know I read Dr. Bruce Perry's book. I think, is it Raised by, I can't remember the title.
The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog.
As a Dog, that's it.
Yeah.
And he talked a lot about music and movement in that book. And I found that really interesting as a practitioner. And as you were speaking then, Lisa, I was thinking about the importance, whether we're parents, carers or practitioners, of that. I don't know if this is a phrase that I'm just making up, but almost working therapeutically with our children through our connections, through our relationship. And that isn't counselling, but it might have counselling skills of being a good listener and all of those things. And I know I work one day a week at the moment in a school for children on the autistic spectrum, and I do quite a lot of literacy work. But a big part of that is confidence building. And I do lots of movement things kind of intuitively with them. And we do lots of creative work. And it's a space where we have that relationship. It's a safe space. We can chat. And all of the things that you said there really resonated, where it isn't about referrals to CAMHS, although maybe needed, obviously, in some circumstances, and counselling isn't just the only option. There should be a whole system of things going on. I know you talk about systems sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would definitely say, you know, some children really do need to have that appointment at CAMHS. They really do. And some children really do need to speak to somebody. But, you know, speaking about what's going on for you as a child is a very big ask when lots of adults would struggle to articulate and speak about what's going on for them. So I think it's really important that we understand that it's one thing. And for some children who are quite able cognitively to articulate things and talk about things, that would be a good thing. But let's not get stuck in that and think that that's the only option. There are lots of different things that are really beneficial, and I've spoken to lots of adults about things that helped them as children, and they're always about relationships and experiences. They're always about those things, and sometimes if you're really lucky, they're about passion for sport, a passion for a type of exercise, a passion for a musical instrument, a passion for reading, you know, really loved the drama element of school. Or, you know, it's finding a thing that really helps.
That is like that buffer, to use the term that you were using. And Every time you've used the word buffer, my imagination is going rawr, and imagining a bowling alley, you know, with the bumpers in between and helping that bowling ball to go down and hit the skittles. That's what I'm seeing with that buffer, of kind of like that tool, to help get a strike. I must have seen some photos of bowling last night, I think, from my football team. But I was also thinking about the passions that children, young people can have, and how parents, carers can support. And I worked for a long time, I won't give any details, but with a young woman who had such a passion for football. And actually part of the role of the school and the carer was actually just trying to find her a football team outside of school. And once we as a team were able to find that for her, it was amazing. And I will never ever forget the quote that she said to me a couple of times, that she felt free when she played football. Mm. And it was really moving to see her to be able to access that a lot more. And it wasn't the zeitgeist, the magic bullet that solved everything, but certainly it was an outlet for her that gave her that space to be free. And I thought that was such a lovely thing.
That's beautiful. I love to hear those stories. And there's so many of them, you know. If we listen to what children and young people tell us, then we can come up with some answers, you know. But actually, we're not massively great at listening, largely because sometimes we don't like the way children are communicating. But they are communicating.
I know. And hearing that can be hard, can't it? Sometimes I suppose we're thinking about parents, carers at home. There's going to be loads of communication going on, perhaps with a child that might have faced adversity or traumatic experiences. And those communications, you know, can spill out in behaviour, can't they? And it can be really tough for parents, carers to hear what those communications might be.
The whole thing can be really tough. You know, that's the thing about parenting, is there's such a shame about getting it wrong, about feeling like you're not trying hard enough, about what other people think, and all of those other things. Actually, it's really hard, and each parent has a different support network themselves. Some are very well supported, have lots of family, but you know, you might have parents who don't have that support and don't have all of that relational support around them. And then it can be really, really difficult a task. So I want to see much more compassion for yourself as a parent carer. And also I'd like to see more compassion from those working with parents and carers, just about how difficult it can be in the very, very complex world we're living in, just trying to navigate your way around the impact of social media, a pandemic, a continuously changing direction of policy. Very, very difficult to do. Building compassion for me is key, but really important is compassion for self and compassion for children, navigating that.
I think it's really important. One of the points that you made there in particular is that compassion for parents, carers, supporting a child or young person, you know, that is going through those difficulties. I think it's sometimes easier to have compassion for children because they're little and not fully formed yet. And I think sometimes parents, carers can sometimes get a bit of a rough deal because they are grown-ups and there are certain expectations that come with that. And I think sometimes in my experience of working with settings and schools, colleges, etc., I think sometimes that can be tough to kind of show that compassion, I suppose.
You've just reminded me, I was having a coffee in a coffee shop. I had a baby and a toddler. And every time I tried to, you know, do anything around this table, it was just chaos, and there was cups being thrown and off the table and just what it is to sit somewhere with a baby and a toddler. And I was kind of crying, really, because I just felt so alone in that coffee shop being looked at. And I was a young woman, and it was just such a struggle. And not one person said, either asked, are you okay? Or, you know, do you want me to hold the baby while you have a slurp of your coffee? Mm. There was none of that. And, you know, we need more of that.
Yeah.
We need more of that. We need more of that, making sure we connect with people, we smile with people, so that people don't have that overwhelming sense of aloneness. Mm. In this task of raising children, especially if you've got children who've experienced adversity and trauma. Mm.
I'm conscious of time, Lisa. I literally could talk to you all day. We kind of end the podcast with three tips or a quick summary about the key things that we've talked about today.
Yeah, I mean, look, tips. As I've, you know, said to you, but there's no easy answers, right? That's the thing. Tips give this illusion of a quick fix, an easy answer. There's no easy answers. But if we focus on moving forward from a perspective of building relational networks, building relational webs, thinking about compassion, how we're compassionate for ourselves, and how we can help our children be compassionate about themselves too, then I think that would summarise very neatly key messages.
You're right, that does summarise some of the things that we've talked about today. Oh, Lisa, what an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.